This is ESPN Radio.
No matter when you choose to put the decorations up, run from it, dread it, it arrives all the same. Christmas time is here, and that means a lot of different things for a lot of different sports fans as we wake up on Monday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, I know we always feel like we are shoving 10 pounds of bleep in a 5-pound bag on a football Monday, but after a weekend where we saw Jim Harbaugh get his first win against Ohio State, Lincoln Riley bolt from Oklahoma to USC, and the Los Angeles Rams do whatever the hell they did yesterday, it feels like we got even more than usual.
Oh, no question about it, and we can't forget about that beatdown that the Cincinnati Bengals put on the Pittsburgh Steelers in Heinz Field. That's something that we're not accustomed to seeing. I mean, 31 points to a division rival, a team that has perennially been in the cellar of the AFC North. Like, that's something that we got to talk about, too. But, yeah, we got a lot going on, but we knew that that would happen on the other side of Thanksgiving. There's a lot to get into, college football playoff rankings. You know, we're talking about another team that was in the top four that got bounced this weekend, and then another team that was on the ropes down there at Jordan-Hare Stadium in Auburn that was close to catching the L. So there's a ton for us to get into today and a lot of hot takes that are flying around that we got to talk about as well.
Yeah, the bedrock's kind of shaking in college football, and depending on the way you came to this, this is exactly what a lot of people have been asking for as far as change at the top. We'll get more on that from Spencer Hall, who you guys see on Thinking Out Loud on the SEC Network, the great college football writer. We'll get you ready for Monday Night Football with Tyler Foljam, our ESPN betting analyst, and Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst. We also want you to be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football season's heating up and the fans are hyped. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. But Chris, let's start off in the NFL, because as we have searched and grasped at straws for the last few weeks to try and figure out who's sitting at the top of the pile right now, the Green Bay Packers may have stuck their hands out, and the Rams right now sort of cautiously sitting at the back of the class. The Packers get a 38-26 win, but that final score feels a lot closer than this game felt, Chris. And I don't know, is it right the way that we're all going to look at Matthew Stafford almost solely as the source of their disappointment here?
Yeah, I think it's fair, just because Sean McVay made the move to trade the two first-round picks to Detroit, and Jared Goff, might I add, in order to bring over Matt Stafford, who was supposed to be the difference in closely contested games in matchups like this when you're featuring two quarterbacks that would be considered amongst the best in all the sport. Now, I'm not saying that Matt Stafford is in Aaron Rodgers' territory, but from an arm talent standpoint, he was supposed to be the one to help unlock Sean McVay's offense and move it a step forward, and yet it feels like an offense that's regressed a lot and that's become largely one-dimensional and awfully predictable when it came to the last three games that they've played. And so I have to say a lot of the blame has to be placed at the feet of Matt Stafford, because he was brought in here to be able to compete and go toe-to-toe with quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers, and that was not the case. As a matter of fact, you could probably make the case that Matt Stafford was a big reason why they lost that game with the turnovers that he had, the forced fumble that led to quick points for the Packers offense, and then the pick six by Rasul Douglas. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of blame has to be put on Matt Stafford in this game. There's no doubt about it. But Sean McVay also has some responsibility in this as well, just because that offense is really, really predictable in terms of what they do, and they're largely one-dimensional as well. And that hasn't been something we've been able to say about McVay-led offenses in this era of Rams football.
Oh, and I'm glad you brought up Sean McVay, because, man, a lot of this game is going to be about comparison with that Green Bay Packers sideline. And I think you mentioned the way that we frame this is going to go back to the price tag for Matthew Stafford. Keyshawn Johnson, co-host of Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max today, said so far flat out he has not been worth it.
When you go and you spend all of that to go and get Matthew Stafford because of that, much like you just said, Max, that he is going to be the answer to get us to the Super Bowl and winning, and he's throwing pick sixes to the Green Bay Packers. That guy is, we thought, was in Detroit. That guy is now in Los Angeles. And what I mean by that is the swap for Jared Goff. That was Jared Goff throwing pick sixes. Now Matthew Stafford's throwing pick sixes. So I don't know. You know, when you say, well, you have faith in Sean McVay to get things turned around, Look, dude, all you got to do is look at his ability and what and how he plays. You spent a lot to get him. And I said this at the beginning of the year when they made the trade. I said, he's the same dude as Derek Carr. It's the same guy. Same exact guy. But y'all gave up all that to get that.
Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Chris, I think the characterization gets a little bit unfair because it's not like the Rams started paying off one credit card with another when it came to the quarterback situation, right? They were doing that already in this franchise. This was the line of thinking they had gone with for a while. Our picks don't matter. We're mortgaging on the here and now. We are going to pay out of pocket for young talent like Jalen Ramsey. We're going to make sure him and Aaron Donald are locked down, and we'll let the future be damned some other time.
Yeah, that's where they're at with this thing, man. They look at first-round draft picks as fun coupons, and they've mortgaged their long-term future for this window of about 2 or 3 years that they have with Matt Stafford still in the prime of his career. So I understand the thinking, and I'm not saying that Les Snead and Sean McVay are off base with it, because you're still talking about a team that's in pole position for that first wild card. Now, they're losing a little bit in terms of the separation between them and the division-leading Arizona Cardinals, but we know they'll have something to say about that because the two teams match up again in the next few games. But ultimately, this is about Sean McVay trying to put this offense in position where they can have a lot more success, because over that three-game span where they've had this three-game losing streak, the offense is predictable. No team spends more time in 11 personnel, and they have no threat of running the football. So what that means is opposing defenses can line up in sub packages. They can be a nickel and dime, match up against those receivers, and all of a sudden, those huge windows that Sean McVay-led passing attacks have been known to have shrink down because you got 5 and 6 defensive backs on the field. And I think we saw a little bit of that yesterday. And then you couple that with pass rushers not being afraid and not having to worry about playing a run, having the opportunity to tee off. That was Kenny Clark, Preston Smith, and Rashawn Gary. They put their imprint on this game, and that ultimately led to the turnovers that we saw from Matt Stafford. And the turnovers were the difference in this game. They were -3 in turnover margin, and that's becoming an uncomfortable trend for the Los Angeles Rams. Over the last three games, during this three-game skid, no team has allowed more opponent points off of turnovers than the Rams. They've allowed 44 points over the last month of football, and they only played three games. Over the last 4 weeks, 44 points off of turnovers for opponents, and they've only played in three games. Something about that has to change. And until it does, you're going to be talking about a team that's largely underachieving, even though they have a bunch of stars that they got on the marquee in SoFi.
Yeah, and the difficult part about this for me in that vein, Chris, is all of it's easy to trace back and lump on the quarterback. Matthew Stafford has thrown a pick six in three consecutive games. That's not great. But all the other problems you just described, those are systemic. Those are issues with the offensive line not being near as good as it was when the Rams made that Super Bowl run. The defense certainly being good still. They got plenty of pressure in that game, but it's not been the defense that we saw last year that was 1-2 in the NFL. And so when you get these little things that drop off elsewhere, we end up pointing back to the quarterback. And that's how we frame this matters, right? Matthew Stafford was brought in here because he is better than Jared Goff, full stop, period. And mm-hmm. I don't think that is not is any less true now than it is when they got him. We can talk about speculation about, is he playing with some injuries right now? We saw Diana Rossini report that he's dealing with a number of things heading into this game, and it clearly looks like he's off. But the problem is, he's not being judged once you give up those picks off being better than Jared Goff, which again, I will say he is. You would pick him 10 out of 10 times over Jared Goff, and given what they had available this offseason, you'd make that decision again. But Chris, the problem is what he's being compared to was on the other sideline last
yes.
night. We saw Aaron Rodgers go out there and mitigate some of the issues that they have with a patchwork offensive line up front. We saw Aaron Rodgers make big plays down the field and exploit the matchups they found at the second level. And so Matthew Stafford is going to be compared to that. Are you able to get us over the hump in other areas while we absorb an offensive line that has aged and not gotten back to that place, and a receiver group that lost its second-best weapon in Robert Woods and got an injured weapon right now in Odell Beckham Jr., who was also limping around last night?
Yeah, but Gojo, I think you hit on one of the key points in talking about the differences between the two quarterbacks that were on Lambeau Field yesterday, and it was the fact that Aaron Rodgers, even though the offense didn't rush for over 100 yards, they had 32 rush attempts. So when you have that level of balance, you somewhat mitigate that pass rush. You insulate your offensive line because those guys up front, They can't just tee off and play the pass. They can't just get into their pass rush every single down and find that rhythm. They've got to play the run, and A.J. Dillon was still a force when it came to short yardage and goal line situations. So having to account for that takes some steam out of the pass rush, and Sean McVay didn't give his quarterback or his offensive line any such protection. And that's the thing that bothers me about this. I mean, over the last three games, they're averaging the fewest rush attempts of anyone in the National Football League. And we used to know the Sean McVay offense a couple of years ago, they used to want to line up in these wide open sets, but run the football down your throat. They've gotten away from that identity, and it hasn't necessarily led to the results that they're looking for. So although we want to put a lot of the blame on the quarterback, and I think rightfully so, we got to start heaping some blame on Sean McVay, the quote-unquote genius, because there are a lot of things that he's doing that I don't think he's setting his players up to have the most success. And then you look at the other side of the game yesterday and what Matt LaFleur did in his plan of attack with Davante Adams and how he was going to get him away from Jalen Ramsey in one-on-one coverage with motioning him to figure out whether they were in zone or man, coming up with concepts to be able to scheme guys open to help his guys out and then to take advantage of Demaryius Williams on the other side of Jalen Ramsey. Like, I thought that was brilliant. And we haven't seen enough of that from Sean McVay, especially in the last month of football. So there are some things from an X's and O's standpoint that the Rams aren't doing. And that's why I say this level of this element of predictability when it comes to what they do is starting to affect how teams play them and not lead to the results, the explosiveness that we saw from this team in the first half of the season.
And there was a ton of that to go around. Matthew Stafford was garnering early MVP consideration, and now we're at a point where we're starting to question what the path forward looks like for this team. Coming up next, though, let's stick with who you just mentioned, Matt LaFleur and that crew on the other side. As we search for an answer to who's the best team in the NFL, have the Packers now firmly arrived at the top of that heap? We'll get to that in about 30 seconds after this word from AT&T. Now, if there are friends and family members that you haven't talked to in a while, don't worry. It's never too late to reconnect. To help, AT&T is offering deals on the latest smartphones. It's not complicated. Everybody deserves something new. So AT&T is giving new and existing customers their best deals on every smartphone, even the latest ones. Restrictions and exceptions may apply. Visit att.com for details.
Stafford hit as he throws left side. Yes! Intercepted. Douglas to the house. High stepping. Touchdown. Green Bay.
It's like you say the same thing all the time when you're talking about Rasul. He's got great instincts, good ball skills. Like, how is this guy in the practice play?
Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And Chris, there's two sides to every story, and we told the Rams version of this. Things appearing to come around and come undone at the foundation. But on the other side, got to give the Packers a ton of credit here. Aaron Rodgers and company went out and really dominated from beginning to end. And whether it was Aaron Rodgers making up for an offensive line that's absorbed a ton of injury in front of him, or Rasul Douglas on the defensive back end for them getting after it here, it might be time where we have to look at this Green Bay Packers team and say this is, at worst, the second-best team in football right now.
Yeah, and Gojo, with a healthy Aaron Rodgers on a neutral field, I don't think you have anybody that doesn't think that the Packers aren't capable of beating the Arizona Cardinals. As a matter of fact, they did it on a short week in Arizona. So when we start talking about the best teams in the conference, hell, the best teams in football, Green Bay has got to be in the conversation, and Aaron Rodgers is playing otherworldly. Like, there was a route that he threw, a skinny post to Davante Adams, where it was just over the outstretched hands of Greg Gaines and in front of the safety, and Taylor Rapp did a poor job of being able to come up in safety support and make the tackle. But just seeing some of the throws that he's capable of making, some of the windows that he's fitting the ball into, I don't think that there's anybody playing the quarterback position at a higher level right now in the NFL than Aaron Rodgers. So it's really special to see what he's doing, but also what they've been able to do in terms of their offense being able to have a little more balance. And I mentioned it, the rush attempts. Anytime you're north of 30 rush attempts, good things are going to happen for your offense, especially when you're down your top two offensive linemen. They had their third string tackle out there on an island playing left tackle, and they did a solid job of holding up overall. I thought from a scheme standpoint, Matt LaFleur came up with some ideas to be able to get his best players the ball in space where they can do some special things. And then ultimately in situational football, this team was able to take care of business with sudden change and capitalizing on the extra possessions that their defense gave them. So, Yeah, there's a lot to like when it comes to the Green Bay Packers. I guess the thing that you will probably look at as the biggest takeaway is the strides that the defense has made in terms of being able to create negative plays, generate pressure up front, and then takeaways on the back end. So, yeah, Green Bay seems like they're poised to compete for that number one seed in the NFC. And given the division that they're playing in, you know, they're going to have a good shot at being able to get their hands on it.
Yeah, Chris, I think right now it's not a stretch to say this is the best team in football. And with the areas they've developed specifically, we talked so much about the defense. Rasul Douglas has done a great job being a steady force amongst a place that's been full of young talent that they've drafted high for the last few years. Rashawn Gary was doing some damage and has been doing some damage as of late up front for that team. But as long as Aaron Rodgers is going to keep doing that on the other side, and I want to pour one out quickly for Dante Dion there, number 21 for the Rams, because it seemed like every time they were looking for a big play, they just found whoever was matched up with him. But, Chris, to the point about coaching then, up top for Matt LaFleur and company understand who they are, right? Devontae yep. Adams grossly outpaces the next closest Packer when it comes to targets in that passing game, but they're mm-hmm. creative in the way that they found him. Tell me why it took until 2 minutes and 40 seconds left in the second quarter for the Rams to get their first reception by Cooper Kupp. Tell me how that's possible where you would let that happen if you're Sean McVay and company. I know the game script hadn't been perfect, but hell, at some point you got to look up and say, the best receiver on our offense has not touched the ball here. How in the hell is that possible? And that's not been something you've had to worry about on the Packers side of things. Matt LaFleur has given them an advantage at that spot, and it showed last night against Sean McVay, another one of those guys we consider near the tops in the league.
Yeah, there is no good answer for the question that you ask in terms of when they first targeted Cooper Kupp. The only thing that I could say is, it was largely a one-possession game in the first half. You didn't have to get away from doing what you do. Unfortunately, the other team, the other defense, Joe Barry and that Green Bay Packers defensive unit, they knew exactly what the Rams wanted to do too. And so they were taking away a lot of the throws that Matt Stafford likes to make to Cooper Kupp and forcing them to rely on other guys. Like on the deep shot that they hit to Van Jefferson, you could see on the in cut to Odell and the in cut to Cooper Kupp, both of those corners had safety support. So it ended up being a situation where Van Jefferson is left in one-on-one coverage against their third corner. So, like, you know, it's one of those where you got to find new and creative ways in order to get your guys the ball. And this is just an offense that lacks creativity overall. And now teams are starting to catch up with them. The things that you did in the first half, teams are starting to find answers for when they're putting you under a microscope and they're doing their film study, their four-game breakdown. And unfortunately, Sean McVay hasn't been able to come up with any answers. And on top of that, they're a largely one-dimensional offense because they don't run the ball. So nobody's afraid to get into nickel and dime because they know that you're not going to test them when it comes to the ground game. So, yeah, there's a lot of concerns for the Los Angeles Rams, but it starts with being able to protect the football and then being able to have more versatility in your offensive attack. Right now, they don't have enough of both.
Yeah, right now, they don't have enough of both, and the Green Bay Packers have a little bit of everything to go around right now and lift this team up. When one part has been broken down, the rest has risen to meet it, and most of that has been led by Aaron Rodgers, who, yeah, maybe we were misled, and maybe Aaron Rodgers makes some decisions off the field we don't necessarily like, but I'll be damned if the reigning NFL MVP isn't playing at damn near that level right now as the Green Bay Packers get ready for their most important stretch of the NFL season. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Coming up next, though, let's take a visit to college football. We don't often do this on Monday, but I don't know if we have ever seen a coaching move as impactful for the entire landscape of college football as the one that went down in Norman, Oklahoma. We'll get to that one next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
My USC Trojans, we stole a coach!
I think it's a good hire. It's a damn good hire. I think he's a hell of a coach. He's like one of the top 6 or 7 coaches in college football.
Lincoln Riley, baby!
Rivalry weekend in college football gave us a whole bunch of all-time performances here. Wild one in the Big House. Bedlam was absolutely bonkers. The Iron Bowl goes to the overtime for the first time in the series history. And Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio with Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty isn't going to talk about a damn bit of none of that because Lincoln Riley decided to go and become the new head coach for the USC Trojans here. Chris, I it was one of the more chaotic college football weekends I can remember, and then the college football gods dropped this into our lap. Lincoln Riley, the now former head coach of the Oklahoma Sooners, taking his talents to Southern California. And Chris, I can't think of a more shocking example of a coaching shift in the sport of college football in my lifetime.
No question about it. I mean, this hire came out of nowhere, kind of like that Virginia offense throwback to the tackle.
Oh, no.
With the game on the line.
Oh,
like,
no.
I know you were calling that game, so you saw that. Like, that came out of nowhere. This Lincoln Riley hire for SC came out of nowhere. And I got to say, Gojo, this is about as good as SC could do with coming up with a big name that was going to be attractive to a lot of recruits in that Southern California footprint. This is an awesome opportunity for the school to kind of get things turned around. And with Lincoln Riley, a coach that's been known to be able to develop quarterbacks in the top draft picks, you're going to see some of that talent that's from Southern Cal, some of those quarterbacks that have been going abroad to other schools closer to the East Coast decide to stay at home and play for him. And then when you look at it long-term for Lincoln, it just seems like it makes a whole lot of sense in terms of being able to find an easier path to the college football playoff, knowing that OU is going to the SEC in a couple of years. So being able to dominate in the Pac-12, it seems like it creates a clear path for you to be a perennial contender when it comes to national titles. So overall, I think it's a win for him because you know they gave him the bag to leave that perch at Oklahoma. And then in terms of being able to reel in top flight recruits, I don't know that it's going to be as heavy as a lift as it was at OU, even with the mediocrity that Southern Cal football has had on display for the better part of the last decade. So I think it's a win for SC, no question about it. It's a home run for them. But I also think it's a really solid move for Lincoln Riley in his coaching career.
Yeah, and it's so strange to say that, Chris, because you're talking about going from one blue blood college football program in the Oklahoma Sooners to another out west. And you're right about the strategy that may go in behind that, right? We don't know the specifics about everything that USC has offered yet, but what we do know is the Pac-12 has been sitting around waiting for someone to take the reins on this thing, as they have now gone five straight years without a team being involved in the college football playoff. That is only going to get more difficult at Oklahoma for the reasons that you just mentioned. And right now, if you already look at the effect that this has had, Chris, on recruiting, the second-rated quarterback in the 2023 class, a kid named Malachi Nelson, announced his decommitment from Oklahoma. Any guess where he is from?
Southern Cal.
Los Alamitos, California. He is the number two quarterback in that class behind Arch Manning, and he has not coincidentally reopened his recruitment now, as have a number of high-level talented players that have been recruited to Oklahoma. And Chris, we know how this goes. There are certain areas in the country that you think of, Florida, Texas, Ohio in its best years, and certainly Southern California as recruiting hotbeds in college football. And right, wrong, or indifferent, when you are one of the blue blood programs and when you have a geographic advantage like this, you only need the right spark for this thing to get back going again. And Lincoln Riley, whether it comes to recruiting or what he's able to do schematically on offense, is certainly that guy. Now, our resident Southern California native, Keyshawn Johnson, co-host of Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, this morning on the show talked about what he believes they need to see from Lincoln Riley in year one. Do we have that sound? Maybe.
Win the Pac-12, beat UCLA and Notre Dame, and then we go from there.
So you're saying all that first year?
100%.
Okay.
This ain't no rebuild. This is not a rebuild. It's a reset.
What I love
talent
about
talent is there.
What I love
they got
about
plenty of talent. Got to coach it up.
And Chris,
that's aggressive. That's aggressive.
It's aggressive and not entirely true. Like, we know there is talent on that roster. We've seen a lot of it, especially at the receiver positions, wind up in the NFL as of late, Chris.
Yeah.
And to me, this isn't really about whatever happens in year one. I think it'll turn around quick because, remember, we've got the early signing period coming up in a time now where NIL money is going to be a much bigger part of these recruiting processes, and you've also got the ability for players to transfer immediately, and all of that could translate to much more instant success for Lincoln.
No question about it. I mean, you're going to see players gravitate toward that program because, number one, SC has the tradition and the prestige, but also it is LA. And so the appeal of being able to go to play at a program that has the kind of history that SC does for a head coach that has the kind of pedigree that Lincoln Riley does is going to be appealing to a lot of high school kids, but also some college kids that aren't happy with their current situation. So those decommits from Oklahoma, that's not a coincidence. I think a lot of those kids are probably going to follow behind Lincoln because Lincoln's bringing a lot of his staff from Oklahoma out there to SC with him. But then there are also going to be high school kids that are paying attention, like Malachi Nelson, who announced on his social media that he was going to decommit from OU. And a part of the appeal from that program was being able to play under a coaching staff that has shown the propensity to be able to develop quarterbacks. And so with knowing where today's college game is, people playing that spread attack, wide open offenses, and quarterbacks being at the center of it, there are going to be a lot of athletes, a lot of good football players that are going to want to sign up to play for Lincoln Riley. And that's going to happen with a lot of homegrown talent in Southern California. So I don't think it's necessarily going to be a success like Keyshawn is saying in year one, but I don't expect this to be a long-term rebuild either. I think this program gets on solid footing in the next 2 to 3 seasons. I would be surprised if you didn't see them competing to be in the college football playoff.
Yeah, a lot of credit to USC Athletic Director Mike Bone for pulling this off, because we hadn't heard much about this, Chris, right? All of the tentacles out there had been Lincoln Riley as a potential target for the LSU job here. Mm-hmm. And Lincoln Riley, we heard him come out after Bedlam in that press conference and very forcibly say, let me make this clear, I will not be the next head coach at LSU. He was very specific about that.
Yeah, he was.
Not lie to us. This is sort of the, you know, I'm immunized of college coaching job refusions that went on in that press conference here. But they pulled this off without much fanfare and landed one of the true program changers in college football. And when you look at the landscape right now, Chris, this job affects not only USC, who, if they become a power again, the lift for all of college football, the lift for Pac-12 and everything that happens west of the Rocky Mountains in that sport, the change for Oklahoma, the team that was supposed to lead the banner for them in Texas moving to the SEC in a couple of years. When you combine that with the fact that we are staring down a college football playoff that will likely not have Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, and more than likely, based on trajectory, not Alabama, you're talking about what could prove to be one of the most impactful years in college football's modern history, with what it opens the door for, what feels like the tectonic plate shifting, and some of the powers that we've seen dominate this past decade or so of the sport cede a little bit of ground in the way that now, with all this volatility, opens up a little bit more for everyone potentially involved in all of this.
Now, yeah, I think we could see a changing of a guard and the balance of power, and with Lincoln Riley going out to the Pac-12, that conference all of a sudden having a bump up in profile and becoming a lot more relevant. So I'm with you on all of those fronts. And quite frankly, I think fans of college football have been waiting on this, because it really has been about what happens in the SEC, some of what happens in the Big Ten, and that's about it. And it feels like we're on the precipice of all of that changing.
It is rapidly changed before our eyes after Lincoln Riley announces that he will be the new head coach at the University of Southern California, leaving Oklahoma to conduct their first coaching search since 1998, before they went and hired a guy named Bob Stoops, and a lot of things changed around those parts. Canty and Golic Jr. is brought to you by Wrangler. You think you know Wrangler jeans? Check out Wrangler.com today to discover new styles and all the latest denim trends. Coming up next, though, a big announcement about who is in the building and who will be out of the building during the Dallas Cowboys' upcoming game. We'll get to that next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And how about this? We will get to news about the Dallas Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy, but I just got this tweeted at me from ESPN Sioux Falls, our fine friends at ESPN 102.3 in Sioux Falls. They talked to former Oklahoma all-everything coach Barry Switzer today, and he said, you've got to get an experienced head coach. Mike Leach coached and taught Lincoln Riley and has won everywhere he's been. He would be my guy. So as we get ready for silly season around Oklahoma, and Chris, you know Oklahoma, we mentioned, they haven't done a coaching search in earnest since 1998-99 before they hired Bob Stoops. They're going to be out here like a newly 50-year-old divorced dad trying to figure out their landscape here. And it is much like that internet thread that went viral. You may think you want to be out here. I promise you don't want to be out here. Oklahoma, have you heard of a group chat? Because you're about to be in one right now.
Yeah, Oklahoma's trying to figure out if they still got it in terms of the pool and being able to get head coaches that have the resume or have the pedigree that, you know, essentially, you know, Lincoln Riley had. I saw there was a report out there that they were actually interested in Cliff Kingsbury, and I thought to myself, why the hell would Cliff Kingsbury leave the situation that he's got with the Arizona Cardinals with a quarterback that's seemingly perfect for his system to go be the head coach of OU and have to walk into living rooms and recruit high school kids every other weekend? Like, it just doesn't seem like it makes a whole lot of sense. So in this spot, I feel like Oklahoma's best served by being realistic with their expectations and trying to go after somebody that has a little bit of an attachment to the program, that has some tentacles to the program. Mark Stoops is a name that makes a whole lot of sense at Kentucky right now. Feels like that would be a fit there. You mentioned Bob Stoops. I feel like they need to go into that direction rather than thinking about pie in the sky because, again, you want somebody that has some experience with that fan base, somebody that understands the culture around there, and somebody that can help this program transition into the toughest football conference in college football. So I know that Oklahoma feels like, you know, they feel like they're a program that's entitled to having one of these big name head coaches, but I don't necessarily know that their view or their view of themselves matches what everybody else perceives them to be.
It's different than it was the last time you were out here, Oklahoma. These kids got NIL deals now, and they can transfer whenever they want. So they're going to figure all of that out. Canty and Golic Jr. is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. The Dallas Cowboys are likely now going to have to figure out what they're going to do without their head coach because Mike McCarthy, now in a latest COVID-19 outbreak in the Dallas Cowboys building, is the latest put on the COVID-19 list. He was on this list put on today and will not coach against the New Orleans Saints. ESPN sources told Adam Schefter and Diana Rossini that McCarthy tests positive for the virus, and in a statement, the team said McCarthy will, quote, continue to direct and be involved in all meetings and game preparations on a virtual basis for the remainder of the week, including Thursday's meetings in New Orleans. Chris, I don't know if this is necessarily the biggest deal in terms for the on-field product, other than the fact that it means that COVID-19 is yet again something the Cowboys have had to contend with this season in their building.
Yeah, as far as a loss is concerned, I don't know how much Mike McCarthy is going to impact. His absence is going to impact the Dallas Cowboys in their chances of being able to win a football game on Thursday night. Like, it's still a regular week for them because they played the Thanksgiving Day game, so they'll have the opportunity to have normal prep. When it comes to Mike McCarthy, he's not somebody that's known to have the best game management skills, that level of awareness. You know that Dan Quinn calls the plays on defense and Kellen Moore calls the plays on offense, so I don't necessarily see this as a huge loss for the team. The one thing I will say is for the Cowboys, the New York Giants helped do some of their dirty work yesterday by being able to beat the next closest team in their division in the Philadelphia Eagles. So they do have some breathing room. And of the remaining games that they have on the slate, I want to say they only got one against a team that has a winning record, and that's the Arizona Cardinals. So the Cowboys are in good shape to be able to hold on to the NFC East, win that division title, and to be in the postseason. But it's all about how this team develops down the stretch and how they get healthy down the stretch. I think a couple of things to keep an eye on. Amari Cooper, he's expected to come back and be available on Thursday. What do they do with Ezekiel Elliott? And then the question mark of what happens up front with the two pass rushers, Randy Gregory and DeMarcus Lawrence. And we heard from Michael Parsons over the weekend saying that DeMarcus Lawrence practiced and that they're expecting that he's going to be available for the Thursday night game against the Saints. So I think that's the biggest thing for the Cowboys moving forward, just their health down the stretch and making sure they're going to have all the guys that they're relying on once they get to the tournament, once they get into the postseason. That's going to determine how far this team can go.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Mike McCarthy not being on the sidelines as the head coach. We are missing out on a golden opportunity to make Kellen Moore jokes here. Now, Dan Quinn's going to be the acting head coach, but had this been the Dallas Cowboys offense of a month ago, we'd have been saying, man, they could get a chance to get a look at who could be their head coach of the future in a Kellen Moore that I'm sure they don't want to let go. But you mentioned it. They're also going to be down Joe Philbin, their assistant O-line coach Jeff Blasco. Terrence Steele, their guy who had been manning the backup spot at left tackle, also going to miss. So depth and a lack of conversation around that position up there going to make this mighty interesting for the Cowboys going forward. Coming up next, though, we'll look at another interesting team at the top of the other conference next on ESPN Radio.